Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Dre.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, oh, yeah. We get it. Start the show.
Let's go. Going up on a Tuesday.
I love it. That's right.
Wow, there's a fifth down.
Well, yeah.
Making football great again, as we always like to say. We are officially talking sports 12th man. October the 9th, we are right in the middle of the pennant, postseason baseball, NFL getting ripping and running, college football season, a lot of things to discuss. Man, again, you are of course with the 12 men. The Oktoberfest is also going on. If you are a friend of the German, that German side, yeah, definitely happened over there too, man. So a lot of love happening. Mm-hmm. We are officially talking sports with the 12 men, and as we also do, like to check in with my fellas. It's been a pretty eventful weekend for a lot of us, man. So, again, I'm glad we're able to kind of at least chill out and come to you and present this episode six. Episode 76, believe it or not. We're actually six seasons in. This is our 75th episode. I'll tally all those, man, but it's been fantastic. So,
wow.
JQ, how you feeling, bro? Yeah, we've been going for a minute, believe it or not. So, yeah, what's going on? How you feeling?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Like I told you, I finally got me a nap and a little rest. You talked about that weekend. I had to drive the girls down for Ava's gymnastics meet in Panama City on Saturday and came right back on Sunday after the meet. So she had the eye of the tiger out there on Sunday. You know, she had the best score routine out of everybody in her session. Second on beam, third in bars, and she took second overall in her age group. So, you know, proud papa.
Oh,
nice.
Man, that's awesome.
Congrats, man.
Man, she must get her athletic ability from her mom.
No, she gets from dad.
Better the voice, always throwing
man,
shots,
awesome.
Always
congrats.
Talking jump. Yeah, congrats to Erica. Like I said, Rob always be throwing shots. Rob Ford, what's up, bro?
Man, doing fantastic, man. Other than these doggone hated evil Empire Red Sox kicking my Yankees ass, everything is good.
Yeah, it's not looking good, bro. Yeah, yeah.
And now they got Chris Sale in the game.
Yeah.
Yep. They're trying to close that door, bro.
Yeah.
It's all good, man. Hey, let's throw out these numbers really quickly for those that want to reach out to help. I mean, honestly, want to console Rod because, again, I mean, it's not like there ain't nobody crying for the Yankees, man. They've been winning, man. So, again, it's all good. Hey, let's throw out these numbers really quickly to the show. 424, I told him. 424-243-9519 is the number to call in to your boys. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. Last but not least, Facebook as well. Go to facebook.com/talkingsports with the 12th man, or if you type in 12th man sports, you will find an angelic picture of me and all that fun stuff too. So, again, let's get this party started here. Let's recap. I'm just messing. Let's recap some college football here. Let's talk about Indiana and Ohio State. So JQ, man. The floor is yours, bro. What do you want to say about that game?
Oh, man, I was actually, I was on the beach. You know, I'm just a junkie like that. I watched it on my phone, you know, when I had it on the beach chair and the girls were in the water when I could sneak away and watch a couple of minutes. To me, there are two things that stand out from that game for me. You know, Haskins, not kind of Haskins performance. I mean, you come to expect that against that Indiana defense. They just don't have enough horses to hang with Ohio State on offense. But I tell you what, Kendall Sheffield on defense, that dude – cannot start no more for Ohio State. And I know he had to with the ejection from last week's game for Arnett for that bogus targeting. But he just got burnt. Indiana made him look bad. You know, when you're Ohio State cornerback playing Indiana, when they're picking on you and it's obvious they are picking on you and going at you and those wide receivers are making plays on you, and, you know, he's a former Alabama player. You know, he transferred to Ohio State that one year in JUCO. You know, he participates in like the 60-meter yard dash and 100-meter out yard. So he's got speed, but he has no technique. And he's a liability for that defense moving forward. He cannot play for them. I hope they don't stick with him because he's just because he's the name and he comes, you know, from Alabama to Ohio State. But my word, he was very disappointing to watch. And the second piece, go back to Dwayne Haskins. He has to find, and I know this is going to sound like I'm going backwards here, but just bear with me. He's got to find some inner JT Barrett in the run game. You know, JT Barrett can't hold a, you know, a candle to his passing ability. But when they needed a third and two, a fourth and one, a third and one, JT Barrett can put his head down and get that and keep the chains moving. And they don't have that right now with Haskins. He doesn't have that ability to keep it on that inside zone when they're keying on Dobbins and get tough and get those 2 yards. And I don't want him running like Barrett, but I need him to situationally be able to rush on third and one and fourth and one. But all that being said, you know, they still scored another gang load of points. You know, they keep it moving. I'm proud that they didn't fall victim to the upset. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, having bigger things in mind, they still got a big game against Michigan at the end of the year for sure. The Big Ten playoff, Big Ten championship game, and then the playoffs. You got to understand that you got to be preparing for that as well. And I'll be honest, Alabama offense, a Clemson offense, even though Oklahoma lost, the Oklahoma offense, Notre Dame offense now with a new quarterback, that defense won't hold up. So those are my concerns for Ohio State, but I'll still take the win.
Man, I think Rob, Jake, you gave a whole dissertation about that. It's all good. Bruh, I love it. Rob, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I mean, I think JQ covered it when it comes to Ohio State. But I, if there's just one thing, I'll just comment on it. I know JQ's talking about the defensive issues, but offensively Ohio State is just going to be tough to stop. I mean, Dwayne Haskins did have a couple of INTs, but he threw for 6 touchdown passes, 33 out of 44, 455 yards passing. J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber on the ground, and Paris Campbell catching 9 catches for 142 yards. Offensively, they are going to be a tough out, and it's going to be tough for any team in the country to stop them from an offensive standpoint. And you have to love the way that Dwayne Haskins is throwing the football too. So they're going to be a tough out.
Yep, there it is. Well, I love it. Good call. Let's keep this moving, gentlemen. Let's do an interesting. I think I was definitely rooting against Texas versus, you know, Oklahoma, and sadly disappointing in the fact that Texas was able to pull it out, man. But because of what they did to my boy Charlie Strong. But again, we'll let bygones be bygones. And I guess is Herman doing it with Charlie Strong's recruits, or just kind of the right place, perfect storm? What do you guys want to say about that one, Rob? Yeah, go ahead, Rob. Go ahead and finish up on that, Rob.
Well, I mean, at this point, I'm sure he's still competing with some of what's the guy was the coach name before him again?
Charlie Strong. Yeah,
you just said his name.
Yeah, Charlie Strong.
Charlie Strong, I'm sorry. But, yeah, obviously he's still competing with some of Charlie Strong recruits, but this is Herman's second year in Texas as well, so he's starting to get some of his own blood in there as well and started to implement his own program as well. So, you know, you have to give him credit. It looks like they're finally starting to turn the corner a little bit. And I can never understand how Oklahoma would dominate this series, because Oklahoma – probably half of their rosters from the state of Texas, and the state of Oklahoma does not produce the players that the state of Texas does. So it's always mind-boggling to me, how could Oklahoma be better than Texas? I know Oklahoma gets players from other parts of the country too. They'll steal some from California as well, and steal some from other parts of the country as well. But to me, it's always mind-boggling with Texas. That's all that talent right there in the state. And for a team like Oklahoma to dominate them year in and year out. So we'll see. Maybe Tom Herman can turn the corner here. But Sam Ehlinger, he's really growing up as a quarterback for Texas. Mm-hmm. 24 for 35, 314 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's getting it done on the ground, too, at 19 carries and 3 touchdowns, running as well, 72 yards. He's really growing up as a quarterback. LeJordan Humphrey had 9 catches, 133 yards, and a touchdown. The defense almost blew it there at the end of the game and let Oklahoma back in it. I mean, they had a 3-touchdown lead on Oklahoma, 45-24, just at the start of the fourth quarter, and they let Oklahoma get back in it. Their defense did force a couple of turnovers early in the game. That kind of helped them as well. But, you know, they almost gave it up in the end. But you have to wonder that maybe they're starting to turn the corner a little bit. And like I said, to me, it's always mind-boggling. They should be better than Oklahoma with the talent that they have in the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. And you know what's related as well. Like, a lot of times I feel like that way with Michigan and Ohio State. Not that Michigan doesn't turn out some good players, but if you look at it, they get a lot of players from Northern Ohio. And that's what I wonder sometimes when they lose to Michigan like that as well. But not recently. But, yeah, back to Texas and Oklahoma. I think the thing with Tom Herman, and, yeah, I mean, you know, we want to try to strong and get done better, but I feel like Tom Herman is closing. And that's the difference. And some of these games, he's starting to close now and get wins where they were finding ways to lose some of those games under him last year. And really, to be honest, under Charlie Strong as well, games they were in, they were finding a way to lose it instead of finding a way to win it. So you got to give Tom Herman a lot of credit. You know, I'm a little, you know, biased to Tom because he was off the court and they didn't win championships. But he's got mm-hmm. – he's a young guy. He really can recruit. And to tell you that, you remember, you know, what's the dude's name, the rapper's name, that made the gold grill for him that he wore. He just, you know, he just has that kind of way to relate to the younger guys. And it's really bad for the other big programs. Because if you look at it, while Texas was struggling, all those key recruits, you know, J.K. Dobbins is from the state of Texas. You know, Barry is from the state of Texas. You're talking about the Alabamas and the Georgias and other schools of the world, you know, still in that elite talent from Texas. And if Texas can turn it around, I think you start to see some of that bleeding. You know, you can put a tourniquet on it a little bit and keep some of that talent in state. And those guys, look, like you said, Rob, they grow up in Texas wanting to wear that burnt orange. And they just couldn't. Mm. The program was in such dire straits, right? But if he can come in there mm-hmm. and do what he's doing, he can kind of lock down that state. He can make Texas a force again.
Yeah. Yep. Nobody's crying for you, Tom, or whatever. You know, it's all good. But like you said, you said right there that he's a young guy. Looks like he's able to, you know, definitely really, like, you know, relate to those players.
Paul Wall.
And, Rob, like you said, there's a lot of talent there, too. So, I mean, it's inevitable. You would think that eventually would happen, but – you know, maybe it was coaching, maybe it was a little bit of recruiting. I mean, not recruiting, but maybe it was coaching, you know. So, you know, you get, like, a lot of talent, and you can't keep all of it, but 100% accurate at that point, too. Gentlemen, let's talk about Arizona and Cal. You want to touch that one, JQ, and to pass on to Rob?
Oh, well, I mean, I saw some of the highlights and some of the recaps. And it looks like a lot to me was, I don't know why we were Arizona Cal. Rob was a wild dude. But it's like that Auburn, you know, that Auburn-Washington game where I felt like Washington won every game except for on the scoreboard. That was Cal and Arizona. They dominated them in terms of yards and all the big plays, but they committed turnovers that Arizona was able to capitalize on, and they won that game. And it's just one of those things that you have to be able to limit turnovers and mistakes in games, no matter how good you play. If you kill a drive, or kill a couple of drives, you know, with bad mistakes, if you get a pick six or a short field for the other team, then it doesn't really matter. They don't need all that time. So that's my cap of that. You know, Cal's got to limit the turnovers and mistakes.
Yep. Rob?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Arizona wins the game 24-17, and they get two touchdowns off of Cal turnovers. And, that's 14 points right there. It's a big difference in the ball game, really. Because Arizona didn't really do much offensively. Cal really pretty much kept Khalil Tate in check. You know, he only had 141 yards, a touchdown, and an INT. And they didn't really do much offensively. Really, Arizona's defense with the two turnovers, scoring touchdowns on both of those turnovers, was really the difference in this game.
Yeah, to me, Khalil Tate, I mean, my goodness, somebody that was a dark horse candidate, I'm just so surprised at his. I think he's got an injured ankle, but my goodness, I thought he was really going to have a big year. He campaigned to get someone, and then to not have the year that he's having so far, it's really mind-boggling. I mean, they needed that win in the worst way, but they need that win. They also need him to play better, because you're not going to be able to count on that every game to win games. Arizona's defense is not that level of caliber to be able to go on game plan and be able to do stuff like that. I'm really shocked and disappointed and surprised at this start of the season. We can't really call it a start. We're about halfway through it now, and we're still waiting on Khalil to take the turn it on.
Yeah. I want to pass some coaching too as well, man. But like you said, again, you have the talent. I mean, you have to be able to definitely put him in the best position to be successful too. I mean, there's only so much he can do talent-wise. I mean, he's there, but you have to, like, definitely help him out with the positions as well, because – coaches would definitely recognize that too. So I don't know what's happening with Sumlin, but man, like you said, Tate is too talented, man. Let's talk about this last game, fellas. Here we got to talk about the Notre Dame at Virginia Tech. Pretty interesting because I mean I know like from what you expected, Virginia Tech is a very physical team, but wow, props to Notre Dame. I mean, again, We didn't know if they were pretenders or contenders, and you know, how do you think they did? So let's start with you, Rob, about this matchup.
Well, I'm convinced that Notre Dame is a contender at this point. I mean, the interesting part is they lose two offensive linemen that go extremely high in a draft, and they still really pounding that rock as well. Dexter Williams, 17 carries, 178 yards rushing, and three touchdowns, averaged over 10 yards a carry. And, man, I tell you, he's got blazing speed, too. They've just been a different team since Ian Book has been at the quarterback position. 271 yards passing, two touchdowns as well. He did have a pick, but they have been a complete team offensively, and they've been really good on the defensive side of the football as well. They've really dominated Stanford and Virginia Tech in the last 2 weeks, two teams that both play a physical brand of football. And obviously you still got the Michigan win from earlier this year. Actually, in my opinion, they should be the fourth-ranked team in the country over Clemson. I mean, I know Clemson bounced back and had a big 63-3 win over Wake Forest. And I picked Clemson to win a national championship before the season. So, I mean, that's saying a lot. But, you know, Clemson
over
has not
Alabama,
been that impressive.
Rob?
No, I said Notre Dame should be number four.
Okay.
Not over Alabama.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, Clemson is number four right now. I said Notre Dame should be number four, in my opinion, and Clemson should be five.
Okay.
Just based on the competition that they played, based on how they've looked overall. Obviously, all of this stuff will play itself out eventually, but so far from what I have seen this season, and especially the way Notre Dame has looked over the last couple of weeks, to me, I think they should be ranked number four in the country. And they just look, like I said, a complete different team since Ian Book has been at the quarterback position.
And yeah, no, I echo all the same points. He's the trigger. He's the key. You didn't know they were sleepwalking through games and they had enough talent to beat those teams. It was like, man, they look like one of the worst top 10 teams I've ever seen. And then you guys give Coach Brian Kelly credit for switching quarterbacks. And Book has taken that and run with it, and he has totally unlocked that team on offense, and it's also rejuvenated that defense as well, where they don't feel like they have to do over the top to keep them in the game, because they feel like they have a quarterback in the offense that can bail them out if they make a mistake, or if they play really well, if they can blow the team down. So I totally agree. Notre Dame is definitely in that conversation, and I know it makes some people mad here in the state of Georgia, but you know, like you said, like Bob said, it'll play itself out. Georgia's got a tough stretch of games coming up here over the next month. So if they falter at all in the way Notre Dame is playing, they will, you know, obviously probably move up into that top four and they'll take care of itself. And just being a top four, because even this year you got some really good teams. Alabama's looked great, don't get me wrong. But I think once you get to those top four, it's going to be not really any easy wins. So I don't care where you rank one, two, three, or four. As long as you're four in the conversation, you're still a good team, but you still have to play two really good teams to win the title. So I wouldn't worry about it right now. I don't think they're going to be in danger of being left out the way they're playing and given what the other teams still have left ahead of them.
Yep. Good call. Speaking of Georgia here, let's talk about some predictions here. We're going to go into that. The number two Georgia goes to your school, Rob. My favorite school that gets all my Falcon players, number 13, LSU. This is at LSU. Rob, I think this is pretty interesting because the fact that it's a day game as opposed to a night game, if I heard that correctly too. So, what do you think about this particular game, Rob?
Yeah, Georgia players go to Cincinnati, LSU players go to Atlanta, and Ohio State come to the Saints.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah.
But anyway, as much as I would like to think LSU is ready for this kind of a matchup, I don't think LSU is back totally yet. And even though LSU is at home in this matchup, I think this is going to be a tough one. I think they play hard. I think they compete. But I like Georgia by a touchdown in this game. And I'm thinking 24-17 Georgia on the road winning this one against LSU. I think overall, LSU's got a few elite players on defense. You know, they got a couple of elite players in the secondary, Grant Delphin, Greedy Williams, and we got an elite linebacker, Devin White. But LSU is not getting any heat on the quarterback ever since we lost Kalavon Chase on in the first game of the season against Miami. So that has been tough. LSU has to generate pressure on the quarterback by blitzing ever since we lost him. And I think that's the one element on the defense that the team is missing. And just not just not overall in Georgia's lead just yet. So I'll say they lose at home by at least a touchdown.
I think Rob was saying Greedy Williams too.
Say what?
Yeah, I think Rob was putting it on.
I think you like saying Greedy Williams.
Yeah, I think everyone likes saying it. They just light up the smile when they say Greedy Williams. I'm gonna go with the LSU, and they were my team. I thought would be the dark horse that would move up, and they had, and they just stumbled at Florida, and the SEC West had a tough day. But you know, it depends what they do with Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, because I've seen Jake Fromm make some really bad decisions. I seem to have some really bad ball control issues with the fumbles when, you know, being pressured in the
pocket. Stop it, JQ. Stop it.
Ask them to go into Death Valley and win. I think LSU wins by points. I still think during the day. Sometimes that's tougher.
You pick them to beat Auburn, so I hope you're right about this one, too.
Yeah, and you also got to remember that, you know, you think an hour doesn't make a difference, but sometimes it does, having to go play at LSU in the Central Time Zone. So it may be an advantage to LSU. Used to playing, you know, that start time where Georgia is not. And an hour can make a difference. You never know. But that they're going to be fired up, especially after last week, a chance to knock off a top five team in Georgia in Death Valley. I have to see Jake Fromm do it. I'm not going to bet him to do it. I'm going to pick LSU.
Gotcha. No, I mean, like you said, he definitely has some elements. It's definitely going to be a tough game. It's not going to be a cakewalk, and that's why I give Rob credit. Yeah, I mean, it's not – I think it is going to be a close game, you know, by touchdown. It's probably from that perspective. Not going to blow them out by any means, and they'll be ready. But, again, not quite sure if they're quite in that league, but it will be, you know, the playing at LSU does give them, definitely an advantage in that perspective for sure. All
right,
guys.
Right.
23 minutes here.
On that. Hold on.
Go ahead.
You've seen every year where a team that wasn't on the level of another team have a home game against a top-ranked team come in and beat them. It happens a lot.
Sure.
You go back to Virginia Tech beating Ohio State. Even though we still got the championship, they're a better team than Virginia Tech was, but they went into, you know, Blacksburg and got handy. That can happen in a one game, especially an SEC rivalry kind of game. So I wouldn't put as much stock in that because, you know, scheme and coaching and just, you know, raising the level of play sometimes takes over for the talent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. It definitely can happen. 100% accurate, man. It's not a knock. It's just like I said, we'll see. They're going to be ready to play for sure. Let's keep this moving here. Let's talk about number 7, Washington, at number 17, Oregon. Rob, go ahead on this one.
I like Washington to go on the road. And they'll be, you know, I think they kind of – they beat UCLA this past weekend. I think they probably took them a little lightly. But I still like Washington. I think they're still the best team in the Pac-12. And I don't think it's close. I think they're clearly the best team in the Pac-12. And even though Oregon is a tough place to play, I'm going with the road team again in this one, and I'm going to go Washington 38, Oregon 30.
Woo. Man, I think I'm going with the home underdog again. Listen, again, are they going to – Austin Stadium is so tough a place to play at, and they had that game in hand versus Stanford and gave it up. Is that not a motivating factor for them? We've been in this situation before. We can beat these upper echelon Pac-12 teams. Don't get me wrong, Washington is – a dynamic team, and they came all the way to Atlanta and gave Auburn everything they won. I talked about how they lost that game more than Auburn won it. But I just they had a hard time having me pick against Oregon again twice in a big game at Austin Stadium. I'm going to take, you know, Herbert at home with that crazy crowd and that home field advantage in another close upset. I don't think we're done with the top 10 being shuffled. That's why I'm picking some of these. I feel like it's going to happen. It happens every year.
All right, cool. We'll see. Finish it with the with your favorite khaki wearing person, Rob, JQ. Sorry, 15 Wisconsin at number 12 Michigan.
This is going to be an ugly game. For what we just talked about, what we might see in Washington, Oregon, some of these other games, this is going to be a backyard. You know, just two bullies fighting each other. It's not going to be a whole lot of pretty offensive fireworks. You're going to see a lot of defense, but bias aside, I really haven't seen Harbaugh win a big game, especially one in prime time, and then Jackson to do it on the road at Camp Randall. Again, last couple weeks I went with the road teams. This week I'm going with the home team. I just think Wisconsin is a better team, and I just don't trust Harbaugh to make the right decisions. I'm going to go with Wisconsin.
Michigan is
the
home
really
team in this
game. Michigan is the home team. Yeah.
Okay, they are the big house. I'm sorry. Yeah, but still, yeah. I don't trust Harbaugh yet to pull off a big victory. I don't think he has one. So until I see it done, I can't pick it. I'm sorry, folks. Yep. I thought it was a camp run. It isn't the big July.
Go ahead, Ralph.
All right. So we're JQ and I are going to differ on all three games. I'm going to go with Michigan at home. I got two road teams in Georgia. Y'all know I'm going to be rooting for LSU like heck. And but I'm picking Georgia, I'm picking Washington, and I'm picking Michigan at home in this one. Wisconsin, to me, has not been impressive at all this year. And I haven't seen Hornibrook grow up as a quarterback for Wisconsin. He still looks the same. They were supposed to be the year he kind of break out this year and be even better as a veteran starting quarterback. And I'm starting to see Shea Patterson starting to put up some effective numbers for Michigan. I know they struggled against, I believe it was Northwestern a couple of weeks ago. Shucks, Northwestern just went on the road and beat Michigan State. So I like Michigan on this one. Like I said, I have not been impressed with Wisconsin. To me, they have underachieved so far this year. I know they're going to get up to play this game, so I still think it's going to be very close. I'm going to say Michigan by a field goal, 27-24.
All right.
Well.
Good call. All right, gentlemen. We have got through the college football portion of the night. We're going to switch gears and talk about some Major League Baseball in the postseason here. Interesting here, the Dodgers have definitely advanced to the National League Championship Series against the Baby Braves. And like you said, it was kind of a surreal moment here, if I can kind of like have a quick second, because, you know, obviously the expectations, we weren't expected to be there. Oh, here we go. And I'm excited the fact that that we played, but we didn't get swept. You know, that was one thing I know. Like, please don't get swept, man. So I was happy that happened. Ronald Acuna still looks like he's doing his thing. And going against a squad like that, gentlemen, it always helps you realize where you need to be, because obviously the Dodgers have advanced for the past couple years, and they have a loaded lineup too, man. It just kind of showed in the in that instance, man. So, again, you know, this is kind of where you want to be. And if you want to copy an example of, like, Houston Astros, like, that's where going from worst to first, and that's kind of your inspiration too. But also looking at the Dodgers, because they kind of have that squad, man. So just, again, congrats to them. You know, we'll see what happens in the next series, and we'll talk about who wins. They're going against the Brewers. And just wanted to get your thoughts on that. JQ, I know you do a lot of Gwinnett Bray stuff too, man. So I know you're close here in Atlanta too. So you kind of shared the fact that, you know, it wasn't like it was a loss. We were disappointed, but it was also like, hey, we weren't even supposed to be there. So it's kind of good to get all that experience in and kind of look forward to the future, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about it is, I think the last piece of the puzzle for the Braves, you know, and there's two things to it. They just didn't have enough pressure on them going down the stretch. And if you look at some of these other teams, you know, that had to keep battling, like the Brewers, and had to play good baseball to get in, and kind of, you know, you want to ride that hot wave going in. Like, sometimes you want to be the sixth seed that fought for 3 or 4 weeks and are playing good football to get in, you know, and those other teams don't really want to play you because you're so hot and you're playing a better brand of football as opposed to sitting on the lead and just making sure that you clinch. And I kind of feel like that's where the Braves were down the stretch and took some of the edge off of the team. But the second piece of it is, when I look at them, they just don't have somebody they can go hand the ball to and say, hey, go get a 6 2/3 inning strong of maybe one run, two hits, one run, or 3 or 4 hits and 1 or 2 runs where we stay in this game consistently. They've got some nice young pieces that can maybe blossom into it, like a Fulte, but they don't have a Clayton Kershaw. You know, they don't have a Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
They don't have some of these other guys, you know, a Gruber or a Verlander. They don't
or
have
a big
that
bat yet, or a big bat, or a big bat. Like a Harper or like a Machado, something like that.
But they've got Freddie and Cooney's had, you know, he's got the grandson. They've got this.
They don't have a
bats,
big home run
they
guy. They got hitters, but they don't have like a home run like power guy. Like, oh my god, you know, like that whole lineup for the Dodgers. You're like, man, I mean, they got some pop.
Well, they,
you know, Cooney's got pop. Freddie's got a little pop, but Markakis doesn't. You know, I mean, you know,
true.
I like
think
Suzuki, but
I think
I'm saying you don't have that big pop. But get here, but fair. Glad
yeah,
I'm
I think it's more
the
yeah. No, I can get that, but I think they have enough pop to score enough runs. They don't have a guy, they definitely have two guys where you just sit back and say, man, it's going to come down to the 7th through 9th because our bullpen, I may worry about it, but my starter, that dude's got me for 6 2/3 or 6 1/3 or 7. They just don't have that guy yet, and I think that showed up against the Dodgers. So ahead of the schedule, you know, they had a good year, but they need to add that piece to it. Sorry, Ralph.
100%. Go ahead.
Yep.
No, keep it going. Rob is watching the game. He's happy. He's watching the Yankees right now.
Well, I mean, just kind of, I am watching the game, by the way, but I was listening to
it. I know, we know.
You got Gary Sanchez at the plate with the bases loaded, so I'm hoping for a miracle
I'm
here
watching it.
For the Yankees. But getting back to you guys' thoughts on that the Braves-Dodgers series, I think if you're an Atlanta Braves fan, I think you got to be excited about it, that it's still a very young team and the Braves are ahead of schedule. This was not expected, you know, going into the season this year. So I think from that regard, you know, the future is bright if you're an Atlanta Braves fan going forward. The Dodgers, this was expected of them. They were the favorite in their division going forward. They were one of the favorites in the National League going into the season. So this is where they're supposed to be with their expectations. And that being said, I tell you what, I'm having a hard time predicting this NLCS with the Brewers. I think this is going to be an extremely good series, very close. I see a 6-7-game series for sure. And but I've been having the hardest time picking a winner. I'm going to go ahead and say the Dodgers. But I think it's going to be an extremely tough series, a very competitive series. And the Milwaukee Brewers, when you talk about their bullpen is loaded. But I think the Dodgers may have the advantage on the starting pitching, which I think in a longer series, best 4 out of 7, having a starting pitching will be a little bit more of an advantage than it would be in a 5-game series. So I think, shucks, can we get one run in at least? All right, we've each getting one here. Let's see. Got another out to play with. But, yeah, I think, you know, in this best 4 out of 7 series, I'm going to give the slight edge to the Dodgers here in the NLCS. The Yankees cut it to 1, 2 outs.
Oh, yeah, he almost ended the game. The Brewers, that pitching staff. Now, I hear you with the Dodgers. They've got the big bats, but – sometimes, you know, if the weather ever chills out and cools off, Lord have mercy, you know, those bats get a little silent and the pitchers start to take over. And Milwaukee, they don't necessarily have the names of the starters, but, man, that bullpen, that middle relief and those relievers, they just shut down a really good, potent Colorado offense. That was one of those things that had to play to get those in. I'm with you. It goes back and forth. I can see either one of them winning it. I agree. They go to the depth. But the depth of that Milwaukee pitching staff, I got to go with the Brewers to go to the World Series. That just sounds crazy coming off my tongue.
First time was the early 80s. What was it, 82 or something, or 81?
The
Brewers make the World Series?
Yep. Yeah, it's a minute. All right, we got a quick call.
I can see that. I've been going back and forth. Earlier today, I think I was leaning more toward the Brewers, but I'm giving a slight edge to the Dodgers at the moment.
Gotcha. All right, we're going to grab this quick call, and as we grab this call, too, go ahead, hold on, JQ, grab this, and then we'll see how everything plays out. If he makes any comments, of course, the trigger has no heart, so we'll see how this plays out. Welcome to Talking Sports with the 12th Man.
All right, thanks for taking my call. I just had a quick question for everyone. Did you guys ever wonder sometimes if sports is just all vain? Because I remember last year when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, how crazy the city of Philadelphia went, and everyone was all happy and excited. And you see them now with Rat, and it's sort of like it's all meaningless. You ever wonder that this is just a total waste of time?
No, it's not a waste of time. Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead, Jay. I'll respond. You go ahead first.
I would just say I don't want to say it's a waste of time because if you look at, you know, how long Philadelphia waited for that team to win a World Series, to win a Super Bowl, I don't think it's a vain because, if it's like the Cubs in the World Series. They got that one. They're going to ride that for another 100 years if it comes to that. And I feel like the Eagles will do the same thing. So, they run into a little adversity. But once you get that ring, this ain't the NCAA where they can come vacate it. You know what I mean? Once you get it, you got it. And you're in the record book as the Super Bowl champion. So I don't feel like it's in vain. They're gonna live and ride off that. And you know how the Philadelphia fans are. As soon as they hit a little adversity, they're going to say, what we want is up here. So,
I'm not talking about the players, because I understand the players is an accomplishment as an individual. I'm talking about people as fans.
The fans.
Who watch this stuff.
The fans,
too. Because it's like, sports in general, it's just all vain. I mean, think about it. Like, I just realized, what are we looking at here? We're watching a bunch of grown men in tights run around with a ball trying to cross the line. I mean, I'm just serious. Like, you ever sit back and realize what are – and I'm telling you, because I have friends of mine who they worship sports. Like, it's like a god to them. They live and die with this stuff. And it's just like people are wasting their life worshiping a bunch of men who are millionaires who could care less if you were to die tomorrow.
I think it's entertainment. I don't know if, you know, I think for the most part it's entertainment. Obviously, we all cheer for our teams, but at the same time, it's entertainment. I don't think, you know, it's a live and die kind of situation. And I think from a fan, that you can't take what the Eagles did away from them. Regardless of how they do this coming season, they will always be the 2017 champions or 2017-18 season champions. However you look at it, whether they go 6-10 this year, 7-9, 3-13, or even if they make it back to the playoffs and lose, they will always be the 2017-18 champions. And so from a fan's perspective, that's something that they can always look back on, you know, as an awesome moment for them. So you can't take that away from them. And like I said, I think for the most part, 97-98% of us that are sports fans, it's entertainment, and we just like to cheer on our teams.
Yep. You know what?
We do take it seriously, but...
We take
but I don't think it's a life
and
death situation.
Yeah, and I'll put myself in that. I'm one of those two that I probably take it too seriously, and I had to look myself in the mirror and say, hey, bro, like you said, this is just a game. These dudes don't know you. They don't care. So, you know, I think you just do it from, hey, this is my city where I'm from. I want my city to be in the spotlight, and I think we get caught up in that so much that we take it too seriously. But I would agree that some people take it way too far to where it just wrecks their whole life if it don't happen for them. So, yeah, we got to find a better balance. But I don't think it's in vain. We got to find a better balance.
Anything else you want to add to that too as well? No? Okay, I guess you dropped off. Cool. All right. Like I said too, thanks for jumping in. Thanks for the call. And I mean, just to say, there was you remember the movie A Bronx Tale? Did you guys ever see that movie, A Bronx Tale?
Yep.
Remember that movie back in the day, Colosimo and stuff like that. And paraphrase the movie too. I never forget it, man, because the best line in there, I think it was Chaz Palmiro, and he was basically like, "Do the Yankees pay your bills?" He's like, "Do Yankees pay your bills?" He's like, "Nah." He's like, "That's the last time I cared about the Yankees," because he was just like so mad when the Yankees lost and stuff like that. And you know, it was just funny, you know, to that effect too. So, anyway, there it is. He's calling back in. I'm sorry. Did you hear that last little statement we were talking about? That one call, sir. I don't know if you want to say anything else. If you wanted to add anything else to that.
I was going to ask, do you guys believe in God? Are you atheists? Like agnostic?
Yeah,
I don't know. I definitely most definitely.
We believe in God.
Yeah. Because I feel like with this? I mean, yeah, because what I'm saying is, if you look around the world and in America, like take how soccer is in Europe, for example, or look at how the NFL and the NBA is looked upon in America, and like college football down in the Southeast, and it's like, in reality, that's those people's God is in reality. That's their actual God. That's the God that they get. Like these same people I see go to church on Sundays, you see them go to church and it's like it's a chore. They go there reluctantly. But, you know, when their team is on, man, they're just like excited. They go to these stadiums. They're pumped up. Every time their team scores, they cheer. It's like, it's just people just realize they're worshiping sports. You're worshiping a football team, worshiping soccer, basketball, whatever it is, LeBron, you know, whatever other these guys are. And I just don't think people are honest with themselves and saying that they're worshiping this.
Gotcha. Well, like I said, I'll kind of wrap this up, too, because, we're going to move on to the next topic, too. But just I agree with certain things, too, whenever you do let something 100% agree to the fact that something can become your God, it can become your idol if you take it to a certain level. And I do think that everyone, as JQ said, as far as keeping balance, because, again, at the end of the day, if you believe in a higher power, yes, that's what it's all about. Rob said it's entertainment. All it is entertainment. You know, like I said, at the end of the day, you know, we still got to go and do our job, do support our families and little things like that. This should not be the main thing that we agree on, too, or that we base our whole, like, existence on, too, man. So just to kind of put that in perspective, that's what I would say. And like I said, I know we've got about 5 minutes left in the show. We'd love for you to call back in, and we can definitely dive into the subject a little bit more, too, man, because it sounds like you want to get into a lot of philosophical stuff, get a little deep with us too, man. So definitely feel free to call in, check with us, and we'll definitely do a little bit more deeper dive because we have about 5 minutes left in the show. But thanks for calling in and tell all your friends as well too, okay, sir?
Yeah, appreciate you, man.
Thank you. Thanks for the phone call.
Yep. And like I said, again, I just want to make sure that it's we keep everything in perspective too, because it sounds like from that perspective, yeah, we could definitely go down a deeper dive with that too. We've got about 5 minutes left, and I definitely want to talk really briefly too. I know we've got about 5 minutes to go, and I wanted to throw a quick note. I don't know if you guys know about George Taliaferro. I don't know if you guys heard of that name, if from any circles. You didn't know he's the first African American drafted in the NFL. He actually died today. He passed today.
Yes.
Yeah, 1949 became the first black player. He's kind of the Jackie Robinson of the NFL too, man. So the Bears drafted him in the 13th round. He was 91. So just one of those quick things, man, because like, we talk about, you know, the game and how it transcends this life and this climate, you know, too. So it's kind of interesting that this actually moment. We always talk about making a football great again, man. So just one of those things, man, that the Trailblazer in 1949, we had the first black player drafted, and he actually passed away. Kind of a trendsetter, if you will. And I know his life was pretty tough. Can you imagine being the first player and kind of like blazing the show too, man? Shout out to him and his family, and obviously prayers go out from that perspective as well too, man. So just a quick little side note on that function as well too. So we got about 4 minutes here, guys. I know we want to talk. We're going to wrap this up and talk about Joe Girardi to the Reds. Maybe that's for JQ.
No, we
got to. JQ, you don't have to talk about that. Touch on that really quickly.
No,
because we'll let Rob wrap up. No, go ahead.
Well, I say that only because they got David Bell and he's a Cincinnati native, and they're going to do the cheap way out and do that. So that's why I say it's not going to happen. He's a long shot at best. I wouldn't mind it, but we ain't going to do it.
Mm. Rob? he just shut it down. Like, it ain't happening.
yeah. I mean, I think it would be a really good move for the Reds, but obviously JQ knows the team a lot better than I do. But, you know, I think Joe Girardi was a, you know, very good manager for the Yankees. Obviously, the Yankees went further last year with them than went this year with more talent. I mean, obviously the Red Sox are extremely tough as well. But, you know, definitely he's worthy of another managerial position. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely. I just know we ain't going to do it. Not
going
to do it.
Yeah, keeping it real. Hey, Rob, as much as I hate to admit
when
this,
keeping it real goes wrong.
I know. We got to do the fantasy football shout outs. And then after the fantasy football shout outs, we'll be right to the OT portion and we'll get ready to set it up. Go ahead.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you all for tuning in again on another show with Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Obviously, we still got a lot more to cover in our OT portion. We can't give you this portion of our show live, so we got a lot of NFL to talk about. Recap from a lot of games this past weekend, as well as some predictions for this upcoming weekend in the NFL. So you definitely want to click on the same link on tomorrow or anytime this week to get our recap from this past week and preview for this upcoming week. We still got a lot to talk about. Give us some feedback. Make sure you hit us up on Twitter and Facebook and write us. Let us know if you agree or disagree with us. But we do have a lot of NFL talk to come up, so make sure you click on the same link as early as tomorrow to get our NFL coverage. We also have some fantasy shout-outs in league number one for our fantasy. Actually, yours truly, my team, the NOLA Tailgaters, had the biggest win of the week, 146.40 over the Bristol Bombers, 106.80. Eagles chick for life, Christelle in Albuquerque, New Mexico, she's in first place with a 4-1 record. In league number two, my co-host, they went head-to-head. JQ's team got the better end of it, the Ohio Players, with a 154.72 to Andre's playoff team's 110.82. Chester in New Orleans, Hunk Smash, has got the best record in the league so far at 5-0. And let's see, league number three, Matthew in Indianapolis, he had the his team Unger's Crew had the biggest win of the week, 156.10 to 90.92 over winning. Unger's Crew, his team is also in first place at 5-0. And last but not least, league number four, my team had the biggest win of the week, Fire on the Bayou, 188.94. So baby got backfield 119.10. And Joe in Houston, Birds Flew South, is in first place with a 4-1 record. So those are our shout-outs for the week for fantasy football. We just had our fantasy basketball draft earlier this evening. And that league, of course, will be tipping off NBA tips off a week from today. It's hard to believe that that's come around so fast.
Wow.
So we'll be back on the air live on this coming Sunday night. It'll be 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific, and we'll get into our NBA predictions on that show prior to the tip-off of the season. Thanks for joining us. Don't miss the OT portion. Good night, people.
You play to win the game.
Yeah,
we don't
Yeah, hello. Yeah, I have all those same things. I know we always get into the OT. We appreciate everybody calling in. But our caller, he's going to take us down a real deep discussion. I don't think we had time for it this evening at this juncture.
Yeah, I hope that was okay with me ending it that too, Go ahead.
Well,
no,
you know, if there's anything I'll just say about that, you know, I would say, you know, I mean, he's probably right about certain people, but I still think most people have their priorities in order. And I don't know if we'll have to do a deep dive into that, but I think most of us, you know, we have our have the priorities, you know, God first and family and sports or whatever your hobbies may be. And, you know, it's entertainment. Yes, we do get excited about it, but obviously there's still priorities. I'm sure from JQ's standpoint, you probably are more excited about seeing your daughter in the gymnastic meet perform. Probably even got more excited about that than you probably did for watching an Ohio State game, I would imagine. So I would say most people have their priorities in order. Like I said, we do like our teams. We do root for them. But like I said, it's not life or death.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, before we wrap up fantasy, man, I don't know why we had to why my guys picked the worst week to play, like, terrible, man. And Patrick Mahomes, I guess if you would have played better, you would have beat me even more. But I'm just looking, I mean, Spencer Ware into Jack, you know, Freeman into Jack, you know, I mean, Golden Tate, man, Ball. It was like, man. And I'm looking across, like, Saquon Barkley, boom. I mean, like, Mixon, boom. Zach Ertz going off. I'm like, man, this is not right, man. So, anyway, it was the worst week, man. So, congrats, bro. That was kind of a painful, but it's all good, man. And, Rob, you got to say it like you mean it. You got to go, playoffs? Talk about playoffs? You got to do it, man. Every time we do that.
We can't even win the game.
So we're already ready to literally jump right into some NFL. And so the interesting season that's been playing out, and like we talked about, there's already some storylines that have been developed, guys. And let's kind of dive into the Eagles and the Giants, because there's some two interesting storylines. Because the Eagles, Super Bowl champions, you know, we talk about the aforementioned, haven't been playing that great. You know, Carson Wentz has been having little struggles, and you know, I don't know if that's due to just, you know, being a little rusty, and then also there's some injuries. You know, what is it, Jay Ajayi is going out. He's out for the season. Giants have other problems too. You know, you got some challenges with Eli Manning. Eli's always been a challenge, as Rob said last week, and OBJ, so it's just like there's some chemistry challenges too. So you mix this all up. What do you have, Rob? Whatever you got, the Eagles at the Giants. Somebody's got to win this game, right? Supposedly.
Yeah.
No, they don't.
You know what I'm
saying.
We can have a tie technically, but I'm just saying. Go ahead.
Yeah. You guys might be shocked on the direction that I'm going with this game. And even though Philadelphia is very close proximity to the city of New York, it's just hard for me to pick the road teams on these Thursday night games. It's so tough in a short week. To have to travel on a Thursday night game, especially unless there's just one team that's just so much better than the other one. But the Eagles are not that team yet, and that's just the bottom line. They're not that team that we saw last year yet. Do I think they still have a very good chance of winning the division? Absolutely. But I'm going to go with the Giants at home. And the Giants came very close to beating Carolina, no close on the counts in horseshoe. I mean, Graham Gano hit a 60-yard field goal to win at the end. Damn, that had to hurt. Mm. And for a good part of me, you know, is thinking that it's going to be tough for the Giants to recover from that kind of loss. But I think they have a little bit more going for them right now than the Eagles do. You know, Andre just mentioned Ajayi's out for the year. I mean, the Giants finally got a big game out of Odell Beckham and. Got a big game out of Saquon Barkley. The offensive line playing a little bit better. They're still not perfect. But I think they have a little bit more going for them right now than the Eagles do, and I think they win a real close game at home, 23-20, on Thursday night.
Okay. And so this way, I listen, because we're a lot of times, me and Rob have the same picks, but this week we are not in simpatico, so to speak. The reason why I picked the Eagles, I'm going to touch on this, but you saw Deshaun Watson, you can, for example, he started from game one for Houston, but he was not himself until maybe, you know, a week or two ago, and he's starting to see Deshaun Watson actually be himself again. I feel like that's happening for Carson Wentz, and it's going to, you know, he's going to go up that curve. That just takes a second to get back to that knee. He can play the first couple of weeks, but you got to think about his return is still a little more rusty because he didn't play in week one, week two, because he wasn't ready physically yet. So now he's got to get ready in terms of mentally with the game. I think that's going to happen. The reason why I really go with the Eagles is because I feel like the Philadelphia problem right now is a health issue. And while I like the guy, I think that Wendell Fowler and Corey Clement can fill that void for him collectively throughout this year. That's like another move. But the problem with the Giants is like chemistry.
Hold on. JQ, it sounds like you're kind of going in and out, JQ, a little bit too, man. So at this juncture,
yeah,
we may not be.
Yeah, I'm up for that too.
There it is. Okay. Yeah, cool.
Okay.
To say that last part really
But
cool
getting back to that, though, I don't think it's just Carson Wentz. I mean, Alshon Jeffrey is not completely healthy. The Eagles' offensive line is not there at the moment. So to me, there are a lot more issues than Carson Wentz. And like I said, I think when it's all said and done, they may still wind up being the best team in that division because the division is down. But overall, that team is not the team that they were last year. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that, but I think they're getting healthier. I think the problem with the Giants is more of a chemistry in the locker room piece, and that to me is worse. When you have your wide receiver throwing his quarterback, throwing his head coach under the bus, and then on a short week trying to, you know, you saw what Pat Shurmur had at his, you know, post game after that loss. You know, now you only have 3 days to get ready for the Eagles. Can you get all that situated in time for this Thursday night game? I'm not saying I can't see the Giants win. I don't think either team blows the other team out. But if I got a team that's beat up and they're getting healthier outside of the Giants, but like I said, I think that Clement and Smallwood can handle that. But everybody else getting better and healthier versus a team that has serious dysfunctional issues, as much talented as they are, I just, until they clear those up, I have a hard time picking the Giants. They have some chemistry locker room issues that can fracture a team, no matter how talented they are.
All right. Good deal. What say you about that, Rob? Okay, cool. You cool with that? Okay. Rob's cool. All right, let's move on here. Let's talk about the Bears at the Dolphins. And, you know, the Bears, you know, they got a little rejuvenance there. You know, Mitchell Trubisky is playing well. And the Dolphins, I mean, they're still trying to figure out if Tannehill's the answer. What say you about this one, Rob?
I like the Bears on the road. I like the way they're playing. The Mac attack has been off the chain. Khalil Mack. Mitch Trubisky is getting better. They got a few weapons on offense now. Offensive line playing extremely well. I think they're the better team. I know Miami started off 3-0. They're starting to fall back down to earth here in their last two performances, so losing it against New England and Cincinnati. And I like the Bears to go on the road and beat them. I really do. I just think they're the better team. They're going to be more physical. And I'm going to go with the road team in this matchup. I'm going to go with the Bears. I'm going to go 27-17 Bears.
Well, so we're back in our good place. We agree. The Bears have a portable defense, and that's the thing. You add Khalil Mack to it, you talked about it. They have an ability to go on the road with that defense. And I don't, like you said, Dre, I don't know if Tannehill is the guy. He sometimes looks great, sometimes he looks bad. He's going to get a lot of pressure. We don't know if Tunsil's going to play. He got hurt in that Bengals game as well. And if he doesn't play against that Bears front seven, or get rid of that Bears defense, period, it's going to be a long day in Miami for that Miami offense. I just think the Bears defense does enough. I think Trubisky comes back to earth. He's not going to throw six touchdowns again. But that Bears defense, it does enough to bail him out to win a closer game than people might think. But I think the Bears win.
So Bears, good call. Let's wrap. We got two more games here. The Ravens at the Titans here. Go ahead on this one, JQ.
So it's the Ravens and the Vikings?
Ravens and the Titans.
Wait a minute, no.
The Titans.
Ravens and the Titans. I'm sorry, I misheard you. I don't think they play the Vikings.
Yeah, you're good.
Another one of those backyard, brawl, kind of ugly, 16, 13, 17, 14 kind of game. I think the Titans defense is a lot better than people give it credit for, but I really worry about Mariota and his progression as a pocket passer in that offense. He shows glimpses, but I don't know if he has enough to do it against that Ravens defense for a full game. And I think the X factor is Justin Tucker. Listen, the Ravens really only have to get past midfield in order to be in Tucker's range. His leg is so dynamic. And I know he had a block kick against Cleveland. That was just a weird game. But Tucker, you know, on the whole, is a very dynamic. He's just a weapon. And you don't really talk about a kicker being a weapon, but he's a full-blown weapon. And I think he, you know, kicks three or four field goals, and they score a touchdown, and they win an ugly game. I'm going to take the Ravens.
Rob?
Yeah, both of these teams lost to rookie quarterbacks on the road this past weekend in real tough nail-biting games. Obviously, you know, Cleveland beat Baltimore in a field goal in overtime. Buffalo clicked the last-second field goal to beat Tennessee. Both of these teams 3-2, and for the most part have been playing really good defense. But I'm going to go with Tennessee at home in this one. I'm going to go 20-17 Tennessee. I think both of these teams are very even when it comes to the personnel standpoint. Tennessee's defensive line has been playing outstanding this year, and it's tough to get any kind of penetration. You know, it's tough to block them. They're living in teams' backfields as far as putting pressure on the quarterback and stopping the run. And I think that could be the difference in this game. Both of these teams, like I said, have been playing great on the defense side of the ball. I think Tennessee's actually been playing better. So I'm going to give them the slight edge at home, 20-17.
So just honestly, a quick question. Does Mariota, do you think Mariota has progressed to the point you thought he would be at this point? And I know he's had some injuries, but my only reason for it is I just, by watching him play, he's so inconsistent. And I just worry if he's going to be a long-term pocket passer for Tennessee. He can prove me wrong, but I just haven't seen enough out of him yet to you know, he's got a good defense, too, and a solid run game. I think he's really the one that's holding them back. I just wanted to get your feelings about Mariota as his progression as a passer.
Oh, I actually agree with you, and I think the reason Tennessee wins this game is it's outside of Mariota. I think it's really more for their defense, and, you know, they have to be smart offensively. And I think their defense could win a lot of football games if they're just smart, ball control, don't turn the football over. That's just the type of quarterback. He's not gonna, I think he is what he is as far as the NFL quarterback. I don't think we expect him at this point to be a Pro Bowler or to be a superstar in this league from the quarterback standpoint. I think if Tennessee is to be effective, they're just going to have to minimize the mistakes with him at quarterback, try to keep him healthy, and try not to turn over the football. They're just going to have to win by playing that way. And really, the Ravens have to play that way, too, to win for the most part, too. And but I just think Tennessee, I think both of these teams are fairly equal, but I think Tennessee's defense is slightly better.
Okay, I got you. I can put that.
Cool. All right, let's talk about the last game. Pretty exciting game here. We got the Chiefs.
They shouldn't have lost to Buffalo. That was ugly.
Yeah, agreed.
Got the Chiefs. The Chiefs playing the Patriots. Really good matchup, guys, because, again, you get to see the mastermind at work, Bill Belichick, kind of see how he plays against the upstart quarterback of Patrick Mahomes. Every week he's doing some things. I think we were talking about this last week. You kind of had some picks as far as what was going to happen. I know I picked the Chiefs here to pull this out because we were talking about, you know, Blake Bortles was going to make some mistakes, and that's exactly what happened. I think JQ had picked the Jaguars in that instance too because we were talking about certain things too. Let me know if I'm wrong with that, JQ, but again, not that we're talking, but it was just like we were just not 100% sure. Now, the defense did do its thing, but again, just good to see a good matchup. But now let's go to this week here, and what do you think about this one, JQ, if you will, the Chiefs at the Patriots?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I picked the Jaguars and that defense to bring Kansas City and that offense back down to earth. But I tell you what, I was really impressed with Patrick Mahomes. He didn't light it up with you know, four or five touchdowns, but he was very efficient. Like we just talked about, what you need to do against a good defense, you know, limit the mistakes and take care and take advantage of the other team's mistakes. And they did that. And I just don't think, as good as Bill Belichick is as a defensive mind, that they just don't have, to me, the horses on defense to stay in front of the Kelsey and the Sammy Watkins. And then you got to worry about Kareem Hunt, you know, running and coming out of the backfield, catching passes. That Kansas City team is playing lights out. Now that I say that, they'll let New England beat them. But I'm still going to go with Mahomes. It to me, when I watch him, it doesn't seem too big for him. And when it doesn't seem too big for 100%. Somebody who has that kind of talent, then you start to be able to throw other things out the window of, oh, he's a rookie quarterback. You know, he's never been in this spot before, yada, yada, yada. Because he just seems really cerebral in the pocket. So I'm going to go with Kansas City. I think it's going to be a shootout. It's going to be one of those games that the NFL is looking for with the new rules. You know, Tom Brady's going to take that challenge. Like, this young buck is going to try to come beat me. I'm not going to have it. I still feel like, you know, Mahomes cannot really pass him. And that's really the reason why I say that. But I think it's going to be a close, high-scoring game, but I think Kansas City wins.
Yeah, it's like keep away if you're the Patriots. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I think this is where the Chiefs get their first loss this week. This game is I picked them last week because they were mainly in Arrowhead. This game is going to be in Foxborough. I'm going to say the Patriots are starting to slowly turn the corner, and I say they find a way to be the first team to beat the Chiefs, and we'll be looking at a shootout this weekend. So I'm going to say 34-31, New England wins at home. I think Brady and Mahomes put on a show. But I think in the end, Brady gets the field goal victory to beat the Chiefs in the end.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about we always talk about making America or not making America, making who almost messed that up, making football great again. And America's team, the Cowboys, they're having some problems, Rob. And do they have the worst offense in the NFL, Rob?
Well, I'm sure the Buffalo Bills are in that number as well, in the ballpark of somewhere being one of the worst offensive teams in the league. So I don't know if I can say the Cowboys are the worst. I'll probably put the Bills worse. But they're close. Dallas is definitely close. And in order for this Dallas team to be effective, they're going to have a really good defense, a good offensive line, good running game, to help out Dak Prescott. And they just don't have all of those things right now. And so it's going to be tough for them to score points because they don't have the weapons on the perimeter. These are the same things we talked about in the preseason. And now they're struggling with the offensive line as well because they have a lot of injuries up front as well. Certain guys not playing up to their ability as well, including Tyron Smith at left tackle. And it's hurting their football team from an offensive perspective. So they can't run the ball. They don't have weapons on the perimeter. And so it's going to be extremely tough for them to win games. And we just talked about the way Tennessee can win games. That's really the only way the Cowboys can win. Their defense is going to have to be great. They have to find a way to be effective running the ball. And it's hard for them because they don't have the offensive line right now. So they definitely have one of the worst offenses in the league. But I'm going to say Buffalo has the worst offense in the league.
I can't disagree with that one at all, all those points. And guess what? Can we go ahead and put Allen Hurns on the milk carton? Because Rob, I give him a lot of credit, has beat this point to death about their lack of weapons. I said, oh, well, they went and signed Allen Hurns. He's supposed to be better. And that dude is invisible. Is he still on the rosters? I mean, is he playing? I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek because I know he played. But come on, buddy. You signed there to go there and to finally get out of shot on Allen Robinson and prove that you could do it, and you are not doing it at all, brother. So somebody needs to go ahead, and you can talk about Dak Prescott, because I've got to tell you what, that defense is playing good enough to win ball games for Dallas. I totally agree with Rob on that.
Yeah.
But if we talk about that offensive line, they could play better for sure and help Dak and Zeke out. But what they also can help loosen up that run game is they could find somebody on the perimeter that can win one-on-one consistently for that Dallas offense, and that's what they signed that dude to do. So if I was somewhere in Dallas or that area and I was a Cowboys fan and I was calling in to the radio station, that's what I would be talking about. Where is Allen frickin' Hurns, the guy that was supposed to come in and be our number one? Where is this dude making plays for us? He's not doing it. That's where they should put a lot of this blame for that offense being so stagnant.
Jerry Jones said that we don't have a number one receiver. Dez Bryant chimed in on that. And we go back, just as I know we keep kind of like beating this dead horse too, gentlemen. We talked about it in the draft, you know, and this is a situation. I'm not saying a rookie could come in and do some things, but you have Calvin Ridley sitting right there. He was sitting right there, and he's been literally one of the bright spots in a pretty dismal game start for the Falcons. But you think the Cowboys like to have Calvin? I mean, even a rookie that has at least has something, you think they like to have that type of, you know, at least something? I mean, I don't know if he'd have that much of a difference, but – you know, the offensive line, those injuries do definitely impact the squad guys, because just no matter what team you have injury, serious injury, that's going to obviously impact you. But, again, just the way they're playing, it just does not look good. And speaking of that, I guess let's talk about Jason Garrett, speaking kind of tie these two together. Your boy, I don't know why he's putting on fourth and one, man, whenever that just wasn't a good decision, man. And I mean, in overtime, I mean, you got to go for the – you have that much lack of trust. I think that also doesn't help whenever you're like, we got to go for this, man. Let's get this. And then he punts, man. So I don't know if that's just – that's not a good situation, man. So what do you think about that, JQ?
You know what? I've heard people say that, and I think the stat was every time that Zeke and Dak has been the backfield together, they are 18 of 19 on fourth and one. And I get that argument, but I'm Jason Garrett. I'm gonna play devil's advocate. Your defense played really, really well in that game. And if you look at it, they pinned Houston to the 10-yard line. So if you say, okay, he shouldn't have punted, but they pinned him to the 10, you let DeAndre Hopkins change the game with that big play. But that secondary have played really well up until that point. I mean, it's an outcome based league. The fact
one
that
play
doesn't
one
happen.
Play.
And they make them punt, right, and make them punt, and they get the ball back, and they win the field goal. It's the greatest decision. He trusted his defense, yay, Jason Garrett. But since that didn't happen, now he's the GOAT and not the greatest of all time, but the for real GOAT, Billy GOAT, as in, you know, go tie him to the shed in the back with a leash. So that's why, you know, it's hard for me to throw that on him, because the game plan, the execution was perfect. You pinned him to the 10-yard line. You're supposed to be able to hold them like you've been doing, and they just were unable to do it for a defense that have been playing well. So, I mean, I don't think that should put him on the hot seat. The fact that he's basically a 500 coach, you know, is what should put him on the hot seat, because that's who he is. But I won't put it on that one decision, if that's me, if that makes sense.
Rob?
Yeah, I think sometimes a coach, you got to have a good feel for the game too. And I totally get what you're saying there, JQ. But at that point in the game, Deshaun Watson was starting to get in the groove in that game. You can tell that he was starting to get in the groove and getting in the rhythm. He was getting in the string of completions going there. And I think for me, it would have been tough for me to give the ball back to the Texans based on the groove that Watson was starting to get in, even though for the most part in that game, Dallas defense had been playing well. And I think sometimes you got to have a great feel for the game. I mean, it's easy to go back and second guess, because you said it right. I mean, they did pin them deep. I mean, they had them where they wanted them, and they just couldn't stop them at that point. But, you know, at that point, like I said, sometimes you got to have a good feel for the game. Watson was starting to get hot, and it showed there on that last drive as well. And they wound up losing the ball game. I mean, that's a tough call. But I agree with you. I don't think he's on a hot seat because of this game. I think he's just on a hot seat based on the way the team performed last year and the way they're getting off to the start, how far they're getting off to the start this year as well. And it's not totally his fault. It's personnel as well. He just don't have it on the offensive side of the ball. He just don't have the personnel. And I don't know how much, you know, he gets to buy the groceries, but they don't have the personnel on the offensive side of the football either.
Mm-hmm. So are we blaming Dak? Are we blaming anyone else? Or is this is just what's the deal with the loss here?
Who's
going to blame for this?
I'm blaming the owner and the DM, his son, for, you know, not spending the money to go and actually go. Like you said, they had the ability to get Calvin Ridley. They sat out going to get, you know, Allen Robinson and some of these other wide receivers. How big of a push did they make to go get those guys? They ultimately are the ones. You say, does he buy the groceries? I don't think he does. I think the Jones boys buy the groceries. They say, Jason, here you go, you know. Make, you know, a mistake with your salad. And that's what they're doing to him. And he's catching all the heat. And I think a piece of the Jones brothers is like, here we go, let him catch all that heat. We ain't going to fire him. Like the owners with Tagliere, with Goodell. Like, as long as you're talking about him, you ain't talking about us. Because they ultimately are the ones that put that roster together. So I agree with you, Rob.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the standpoint of Dak Prescott, I don't think, you know, he's ever going to be an elite NFL quarterback. I think everything around him has to be set up perfect for them to be really good. They got to have an elite defense. They have to have a great offensive line, and he has to have a good running game. And I think if you give him all of that, he can be effective and they can win ball games, as we saw a couple of years ago when they were 13-3. And, I mean, obviously that's a lot, but if you can give him that, I think he can protect that team and he can win and be effective as an NFL quarterback. I mean, we've seen – average quarterbacks win Super Bowls in this league, but they've had to have a lot of great things around them. I mean, Trent Dilfer won with the Tampa Bay Bucks, but they had an elite defense, and he played ball control and took care of the football. Yeah, Baltimore. So he can be an effective NFL quarterback, but you got to protect him in other areas.
Yes, the only caveat, and we can move on. The only caveat for me for Dak Prescott, I would like to see him get a DeAndre Hopkins, a Julio Jones, AJ Green, a OBJ, a Antonio Brown before I cast that particular lot on him totally. If he looks like he's trending that way, yes, I agree with that. But I also, so to your point, we can't have it both ways. If we say they don't have any weapons, and then say he's never going to be an elite quarterback, because an elite quarterback still has to have elite weapons to put up good numbers. So I give him the caveat of he hasn't had a game-changing, you know, in his prime wide receiver. I think, you know, Dez was on the backside of that, and they didn't replace Dez with somebody that could fill that void in terms of being his prime as a number one wide receiver that other teams have to game plan for. They don't have that on that team. So until he gets that and then fails, then I'll be more comfortable saying that. But I would like to see him – not like to see him get in terms of a Cowboys fandom, but in terms of an evaluation, see if he got that kind of talent on the outside, what he could do with it.
I don't know. I'm gonna disagree slightly, JK, because I think Aaron Rodgers had to have the most elite wide receivers, but he's been able to do a lot of stuff. Same thing Tom Brady hasn't had. He's had some, but Tom Brady's been able to do something with some not great receivers. You know, so sometimes you can elevate your team with your quarterback play too, man. So you don't, you know, I think that's one of those 50-50 things, man. So it does help if you're not, you know, like a top echelon quarterback, as Rob said, but, you know, if you're just kind of a game manager or whatever,
weird.
Call Dak Biz. Yeah, good.
I think most of Drew Brees' career, he hasn't had elite receivers either.
That's a good call.
Okay, that's three guys.
There are
tiers to this. You just named Brady, Brees, and Rodgers.
Those are the elite quarterbacks, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the up echelon, like, all-time quarterbacks. I never said he was going to be bad.
Okay.
But if he's a step below that, he'll still be very effective. But, you know, so I'm not going to put him in the middling kind of quarterback, you know, that the league has seen and still continues to see. So there's area between those two. So that's my only point. I agree that those quarterbacks have made other lesser guys better, but those guys are special quarterbacks. I never said that was going to be special. But he can be –
And we didn't
I
say
don't
that
know
you
if he can
either,
be. He
yeah,
can just, yeah, he could be a step below that given the right personnel around him. That's the only point.
I got you. Hey, so speaking of this, you know, I got to say this. I mean, I really, really, really hate the Saints. Really, really hate the Saints with a passion. But I am a fan of Drew Brees. I know that sounds
we
weird
hate you
coming
too.
From the Falcons there. And thank you. I hate you guys as well. But I am a fan of Drew Brees. I think he's a great guy. Great, great. Quarterback, obviously Hall of Famer, and he's from, you know, Purdue in Indiana, man. So it's hard, you know, my heart is split here. But greatness recognized, and I have to say acknowledgement, he is a great quarterback, and he breaks the passing record, the passing yardage record. You know, Peyton Manning was a great message that Peyton Manning did as well too,
that
man. So just a great guy. And congrats to Drew Brees, man. I mean, like I said, seeing him, you know, twice a year, I mean, this dude is incredible. I mean, it's single-handedly has done some things to us, man, which is it breaks my heart, man. But again, I respect the dude and respect the competitor. And, you know, just wanted to say that, Rob, as you kind of take this as far as how he's breaking the pass record, you can have your little moment here, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, obviously appreciate the kind words. But, yeah, I mean, that was a very special night. And the way he broke the record was, you know, a lot of people don't recall a few years ago when Peyton Manning broke the record. But, you know, not to downplay Peyton Manning, but when he broke the record a couple of years ago, he actually had a horrible game. And, he was actually upset that they stopped the game to reward him for breaking the record. I don't know if you guys recall that. And but, you know, yeah, I can't remember who they were playing. He was with Denver. But he was actually having a horrible performance. And, you know, that was the last year of Peyton's career. So he wasn't playing at his best when he broke the record. But the way Drew Brees broke the record last night was phenomenal. I mean, what he over 300-some yards passing, three touchdowns. And in the play, he actually scored a touchdown on it when he broke a record. You know, he looked the defenders to Alvin Kamara in the flat and he moved the defenders off of Tre'Quan Smith and left them wide open on the sidelines and got a touchdown on it. So it was actually an incredible quarterbacking play, and in the fashion that he broke the record was phenomenal. And but the NFL, man, come on. The team celebrating the guys breaking the record, and they threw a flag for celebration.
I mean, that's
stupid. I mean, what
no
is,
fun, Lee.
You're going to stop the game to give them the football, give the football to the man with the white gloves like you're a deacon in the church, and you're going to give the guy a paper like he just won a science
issues.
Project?
Wow.
And then you're going to flag the team for celebrating the accomplishment?
Yeah, that's confusion at its finest right there.
That's ignorant.
I mean, what is
ignorant.
The NFL's problem?
My thing is, Coach, my thing is I don't even think you do it right then. It was cool. Don't get me wrong. Like I told you, you know, shout out to Drew Brees. That dude is ridiculous. Everything is mental, especially that, you know, shoulder injury as well. That was really cool. Over there and had his sons come up to him. You know, that's the only time it made me like, oh, I wish I had a son, just to have those three boys come up to him with your daddy and his pads breaking the record. I mean, that's, I you know, I've gotten old and sentimental. There's just nothing to say. Yeah, it's special. So I give him a lot of credit. But, you know, don't do that right then if you're going to do that. Do it at halftime or something like that to celebrate it. If I'm another team, I'd be kind of pissed off if you stop the game and the game flow for it. But, you know, it's something that big. I'm going to give him a for real clap, not a golf clap, that Drew Brees is the dude. A piece of me, and I'm not a Saints fan, but when they got down there at the end and they took him out, and he was, I think he's sitting at 499 touchdowns, I believe. A piece of me was like, why not just do it all in the same game and let him go ahead and get 500? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I really thought that. And I was like, oh, you know, but that's class on Sean Payton's part. We can do that later. We're just, you know, not embarrassing. We already got this game won. So I give him kudos for not doing that because Jaquan Jenkins would have said, yeah, we're going to play extra pass for this 500.
On a PlayStation, he would have kept going.
Yes, sir.
But that good for
absolutely.
The home crowd, though. Do it for the home crowd, may have been a big opportunity, too, though, guys.
Yeah, good. I'm sorry.
But, you know, I know I'm being a little bit facetious with the, you know, the white gloves and the little paper they handed him. But in the end, it was still a very special night and a very special moment for Drew Brees and New Orleans and even for the NFL, too, because it couldn't happen to a better guy. You know, with that being said, but I just didn't, you know, I just didn't like the way the NFL handled the whole thing with the celebration and everything and penalizing the team. And, you know, I thought that was ridiculous, but still an incredible accomplishment, an incredible moment.
Absolutely.
And it's crazy how Drew Brees, how, you know, not knocking the Chargers, man, they've always seemed to make certain decisions with quarterbacks here. Whenever Drew hurt his shoulder, and then, you know, they decided to go the Philip Rivers route. And you do wonder what could have been. Not that Philip Rivers is chopped liver by any means, but you still wonder what would have happened if Drew would have continued, if they would have decided to kind of like, you know, stick it with him, man, and how the fortune would have probably changed for that franchise too, man. I know, you know, they had the offense of LT and Antonio Gates, man. They just had a prolific offense, man. But then what would have been, man? So, there you go. That's why they're moving. Go Chargers, as JQ likes to say. We got about 10 minutes here. I want to try to see if we can get all these subjects in, guys. So we're going to be brief. I'm not going to comment too much. I'll let you guys kind of take the lead. Let's talk about Mike McCarthy. Is he in the hot seat? And then Aaron Rodgers just looks like he's been just – he's having a rough year. I know some injuries are kind of hitting him, man. But, I'm sure JQ got – get some feedback as far as from Big Michael, what Michael be saying about this too, man. But answer those two questions, and we'll let pass on to Rob and go from there.
Yeah, well, the thing, as long as you're the head coach with a prolific quarterback, like we just talked about in terms of a transcendent quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, when you don't win games, you feel like you always see. That's just always going to be the nature of the beast. You get the reward when you win. You get, you know, the risk and the hate when you lose. But this is about Mason Crosby for this week. And I don't even really think we have this conversation. Mason Crosby just doesn't completely, sorry, but shit the bed in that game against Detroit. I mean, wow, he missed five kicks.
Five kicks
indoors, Mason Crosby. Are you serious?
Oh, my God.
Five.
Yeah.
You're Mason Crosby. You have been so good for them for so long. That might just be one of those anomalies. We don't know if it's the end of Crosby, but he really lost that game for them. Somebody just needs it right, and that's what made him makes him so phenomenal is that his athletic ability to escape and be able to get key first downs will play better when he's healthy. So I think that's holding him back. I think he still has the talent there. You still see him make ridiculous throws like that one to Allison against the Bears when he came back from the initial knee injury. So just take it, page from Aaron Rodgers, R-E-L-A-X, relax. Let him get a little healthier. You know, Crosby's probably not going to miss five more games. Cobb didn't play in that game. Devontae Adams was gimpy. And then you didn't also have Allison. So they would not only have an unhealthy Aaron Rodgers, but they also had a decimated wide receiver core and a kicker that missed five kicks. So how often is that going to happen in one game? You know what I mean? So I'll take a long
Lions.
Time. From
Lions caught lightning in the bottle. Good, Rob.
Yeah. And also, you know, obviously Green Bay, they lost three fumbles in that game too. So you put together the missed field goals and the three fumbles. That was a big blow to that team. They had 500-some yards of offense in that game. Detroit only had a little bit over 200. But yet Detroit won the game. But, yeah, those are good points, those missed field goals. But those fumbles also and those turnovers hurt as well. But, you know, I've been saying this for a couple of years on the show, that Aaron Rodgers is still very good. But he hasn't been great like he has been maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago. And to me, he's still good, but he hasn't got back to that great status yet. And, you know, but you see some, I mean, he had 20 incompletions in his game this past week against Detroit. And I know a portion of it could be the injury, but to me, still not what he was 3, 4, 5 years ago, in my opinion, based on what we've seen the last couple of years.
Injuries to him and injuries to that we were wide receiving core. Like I said, I think they'll be fine. They just have to be same with the Eagles.
Yeah, they're definitely. Yep. All right, we've talked about the Green Bay here. A lot of love, Big Mike. Hopefully, you appreciate that little shout out. Hey, Rob, let's kind of talk about the NFL rookies, their success in Week 5. Go ahead and highlight that.
Well, you know, Josh Allen, Buffalo got a 13-12 victory. You know, Josh Allen. Nothing impressive, 10 out of 19, only 82 yards passing, very ugly. We got a one INT. I mean, he did run for a touchdown. He had four rushes for 19 yards, but 10 out of 19, 82 yards, wow, and he won the game. Maybe I'll change my prediction with Tennessee winning if they lost a team that played like that. But yeah, so congratulations to them for getting the win. Baker Mayfield, on the other hand, you can start to see that that he may have it. You know, I think he has the it factor. 342 yards. He's processing information quickly. He's getting rid of the football quickly. He had an INT in this game, 25 out of 43. The completion percentage, you would like for it to be a little bit better. He's at 58.1%. But you're looking at some of the throws he's making. He's throwing the football with confidence. And looks like he's processing information quickly, getting rid of the football quickly. I think he has the it factor. Sam Darnold, he threw three touchdown passes, but his completion percentage was not pretty either. 10 out of 22 for only 45.5%. But like I said, he did throw for three touchdown passes, which has helped his QB rating to get up to like 98. The Jets got a very big win, 34-16 over Denver. And Josh Rosen got the first win as well as a starting QB. He wasn't pretty as well. 10 out of 25, only 40% completion percentage, one touchdown pass, but his team got the victory. So all of those QBs that we just talked about, they all won.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, cool.
Yep,
you want to talk about the Ricky?
Yeah, I think the phone was on because it was starting to go out. So you might hear the nicer sounds. I'm going to speak a phone for the last piece. The thing about the rookie QBs, and Rob highlighted on terms of the stats, you know, it's not just about them, it's also about their teams. And I think, the week before or 2 weeks ago, they all lost. And this is just the wave you're going to ride when you talk about rookie QBs in the NFL. They're going to have weeks where they're together and they're able to win. And then you have weeks where, you know, they get exposed because, hey, Rook, this is the NFL. And they get beat up a little bit. So, I'm not going to jump the gun on them, but I agree with Baker Mayfield. And I said that when they drafted him. It was like, if you got any questions, this dude has won at Oklahoma, and he most definitely has the it factor. And I hate to say that in my division, that is just, you no longer can count on two wins against the Browns, and that's where it is. They could really beat them.
they could really be undefeated. You know, they blew that game in New Orleans. The New Orleans, give them credit for winning the game, but they blew it, and they blew that game in Oakland. And they should have won that game,
against Pittsburgh.
Yes, sir. They could really be undefeated. Like, that's not a bad Browns team. He's given them what they needed at the quarterback position. So, to me, he's the one that stands out. But he's going to have his bumps in the road, like the other ones are experiencing. I think he just has a little bit more talent in Cleveland. We just didn't pay him no mind because they were freaking 1-30 or 1-31 over the past 2 years. So, you know, I give Baker a lot of credit. You know, and next week we can talk about them being 1-4. It's just going to be the nature of the beast when you're looking quarterback in the NFL.
The Cleveland Browns have more wins this year than they have the last 2 years combined.
That's unreal.
They only have one win the last 2 years, and they have two wins already this year. That is unreal. But I'll give Cleveland Browns credit. I think they made the right choice. I was a little skeptical with them picking up Mayfield over Darnold. I have to admit that. But based on what I'm seeing thus far, and it could be that he has more – he definitely has more talent around him on the offensive side of the ball than Darnold has right now with the Jets. But at the moment, he looks like he was definitely the better choice for the number one pick at the quarterback. And I was definitely very skeptical of that when he picked him.
Good call. Hey, gentlemen, let's talk about we're going to briefly say about the Lions here that the defense within the game, I mean, just turnovers. Like I said, Aaron Rodgers is not himself, as we highlighted. That's what I'm going to go with that, too, so we don't have to spend too much time on that. Cause we're about, you know, it's like right at 12:30, so I want to make sure we get these last couple topics before your friend cuts off JQ, as she likes to do. Really quickly, let's talk about are the Rams the best team in the NFL? Can anyone stop the Rams? That's on you, JQ.
You know what? I would say they are. And, you know, I look at it, and it's close. It's a 1A, 1B because you have to put Kansas City in that. You have to put Kansas City in that. But the reason why I give the Rams the advantage is because of that defensive line and that defense, even without having Talib and still a kind of gimpy Marcus Peters. Are they giving up a lot of points? I get that. Playing in Seattle, totally understand that. But I think that's a function of being injured in the back end. But I think that when the Rams are right, 100% right, and the Chiefs are 100% right. They're both really, 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 really good teams. But that Rams team with that defense, you saw Sue and Donald, they just wreck games. They absolutely wreck games. And Kansas City doesn't have anybody on that defensive line that can do what those two guys do. And, you know, another piece of it is I love Sean McVay in that 4th-and-1 going forward because, obviously talking about Jason Garrett, he knows the talent he has. I've got Todd Gurley back there. I've got that offensive line. Oh, we going for it. And you're going to get it. There's no question. There's no doubt we're going to do it. I love the way they're clicking all cylinders. I just think the Rams are the best team right now. And they were down 2 wide receivers in that game as well, and they still put up that kind of points. They are diverse. They are a very good team.
Nice.
Yeah, I would give the Rams a slight edge over the Chiefs as well. Although I will say the Chiefs have shown me something the last few weeks on the defensive side of the ball, which early in the season they did not. They were giving up a lot of points. They couldn't stop anybody either. They were just outscoring people. But the last couple of weeks – I've seen a lot more competitiveness from their defensive side of the football. They are getting better, but I will give the slight edge to the Rams. You got to like Sean McVay's confidence and his aggressiveness. And I was watching the end of that game against Seattle. At first, he had the punting team out, and he changed his mind, brought the offense back out to get that first down. So having that, you know, Anthony McFarland, Booger McFarland, as we know him, on the broadcast last night, well, he said it best. Sean McVay and Sean Payton are the best play callers in the game right now. And McVay, he's just got that confidence. He's got that aggressiveness. He's got that cockiness to him. He's young. He's brass. And he's got the talent. Jared Goff, you seeing why he was picked number one overall. You got Todd Gurley in the backfield. And you really got a set of wide receivers that's really coming on here. And Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and Brandon Cooks as well. So offensively, they are extremely tough to stop. They have the weapons, and they have some playmakers on defense. And so far, I would definitely say if we had to go with the power rankings, I would definitely have the Rams number one at the moment.
Yeah, just real quick, I don't know if you saw the thing with Bay on Bleacher Report, where they, I think it's Phil Simpson, how was his first name? Sam, the guy into the Rams, and they were talking to Sean McVay, and they were quizzing him about plays when he was coordinated in Washington. Like 3-4 years ago, random plays and games, and he was calling them back in like from 3rd quarter in week 3, you know, 4th quarter in week 12. Like we called this play, this guy was open. This was the defense, And this was calling it back, and they were like, wow, that's amazing. That's who they have now. And the head coach is shouting.
With them. When he's that kind of guy, you can be cocky.
That's amazing.
True indeed. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good call. I mean, and then also he didn't come from you know, John Gruden too. So he had a little edge to him too. Hey guys, here we got a couple minutes. It's right at 12:30. Really quickly, do you want to talk about the? I don't want to talk about the Steelers. Steelers offense, really quickly. I don't think they finally woke up. I just think the fact that they played against a very undermanned Falcon team that clearly has lost three Pro Bowlers, and this, the effect of it is not good. Give him props. I mean, obviously, Brown did his thing. Roethlisberger, did, you know, even who made freaking Connor look like freaking Barry Sanders, apparently. But yeah,
he's actually been playing good all year. Actually,
he has, but we made him even look. I just felt like we couldn't, for some reason, I don't know why we couldn't tackle that dude. But it is bad. So really quickly, I'll touch on that, and we'll wrap up the show. So go ahead, JQ, and I'll let Rob finish it up with that and wrap up the show.
I think they have. I think they found the cure that ails them. That's the Atlanta defense. And I agree with what you're saying, but sometimes it just takes playing the team and seeing that ball go into the wide receiver's hands and go through the end zone and everybody be on one accord heading to another week, which I hate because it's Bengals week. But I think they have turned the corner. They're going to have a little bit more adversity, I think, with Cincinnati because the Atlanta defense is just decimated. And you can't underscore that enough. That defense is decimated in Atlanta. But sometimes, like you said, we talk about basketball. You just need to see the ball go through the hoop, and then you start to get on your run. You get your confidence. I think that was a real big confidence builder going for that offense. And, you know, you can't bury the shovel on them. I told you that from the get-go. They're going to still be a force in that AFC playoff equation, you know, going through the season, as much as I hate it.
Good, Rob.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, rain on the Falcons or anything like that. But yeah, it's basically the Falcons are really struggling defensively right now. We look at the last 3 weeks with 43 to the Saints, 37 to Cincinnati, 41 to Pittsburgh, and plus all three of those teams have some really good weapons on offense too. And to go along with the injuries that the Falcons have on defense right now, so it's a combination of both. But I will say this: Pittsburgh has actually had some really good offensive games against some other teams this year too. I mean, they put up close to 40 against the Chiefs as well, and they lost. And so, I mean, they've had some other games this year where they've looked really good offensively as well. And so, I mean, the weapons are there. James Conner is starting to – he's not the back that Le'Veon Bell is, but he's starting to help them to forget about him a little bit because he's been very effective as well, both in the pass-catching game as well as running the football. They were able to get Antonio Brown back in the mix here this past weekend. Juju Smith also played extremely well as well. So, I mean, they have the weapons to be effective on an offensive end. I think, really, I didn't think Pittsburgh was going to be able to hold Atlanta to 17 points, though. To me, that was the biggest surprise out of this past weekend. I thought this game was going to be another. I thought this was going to be another classic. You know, I'm thinking Atlanta is probably going to be in the shootout just about every game they're in. And so to me, that was the biggest surprise that Pittsburgh was able to hold Atlanta to 17 points.
Not good. Wrap it up, Rob.
We got a comment on our Talking Sports page about 20 minutes ago. Actually, it's a friend of mine who lives in Salt Lake City. He said, why are we not talking about Taysom Hill? But yeah, obviously you know Taysom Hill went to BYU. And obviously the Saints are finding some ways of putting him in some offensive packages with run-pass option and things of that nature, using his athletic ability. And it seemed like every week Sean Payton is moving him around and putting him in different spots on the field. Last night lined up at tight end, some at wide receiver, quarterback, returning kicks. So it's unreal. It's given us another element to our offense. So it's definitely a creative piece. So there you go, Dan. That's your Taysom Hill shout out. Like I said, he hit us up on our Talking Sports page about 20 minutes ago. I actually just saw it as we were getting ready to close here. But anyway, we thank you all for tuning in to the show. We'll be back on air live on Sunday night. That's going to be 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for our friends in Salt Lake City, Dan, we're going to be on at 9 p.m. Mountain Time on Sunday night. Thanks for tuning in, people. Good night.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you. Appreciate your caller for giving us some deep philosophical discussion here this evening. I appreciate all the comments you put on the Twitter page and the Facebook page. I appreciate all the interaction we can get. As long as it's positive, I'm 100% behind it. We love y'all participation, and we'll talk to you next week. Go Bengals.
Yeah, I saw that, but I think I had enough. Saints talk for the day, man. So that was that's.
Oh man, you want to treat our followers and listeners?
I'm just joking, man. That was funny. I figured you're gonna make a point about that too, man. But if we had a chance to talk about that too, but again, good call on that.
I just so happened to see it. It looked like he commented about 20 minutes ago. So.
Yeah, I saw that. I popped in. I was like, oh man, I was wondering if we're gonna get time to get in there too. But you know, good call. Appreciate the comments as always, as Rob said. JQ talked about it too, man. We appreciate you calling in. And again, that trigger, I thought he was going to say something, you know, whenever he called in. I was waiting for him to kind of like try to catch us or something like that. Did you kind of feel
that?
Yeah, that
button
well
on the finger.
At first? Yeah, I was like, man, somebody called it like a 1-1. It was like a 1-1-1 number. I had no idea what that was about. So if you called and your number was like 1-1-1, 1-1-1-1, I have no idea what the number is. So I ignored that. So again, if you're kind of calling the show, make sure that you come with a sports talk-related topic. Don't try to come in and try to get us, man, because the trigger has no heart, as they say. So, again, we're trying to be positive.
Say y'all spending too much time watching sports.
Oh, my goodness. We the fans, we definitely have to, like, mind our P's and Q's because sometimes fans be getting away with a lot of crap, man. So I'm with them on that. They shouldn't be our gods, for sure. It's just a game. It's not like my life is going
to
go down.
Game Sunday.
Here we go. Rob is in his pulpit. Again, fellas.
They'll be looking at your watch. Man, I hope you hurry up, man. The game's starting 12 minutes.
sounds like some experience right there. That's why you go to the early service. You avoid all that mess, man. You know, so you know that's what you do, man. You go to the early service, you get in, get out,
man.
And then that way you're out like 10 o'clock.
Every time the Saints play at 12 noon, Rev got a long message.
Oh, we got some serious issues. Oh man. that's Rob for you, man. He about to. What else you got, Rob? You got some more jokes, man? This sounds like this. Sounds
I don't
like
know. I know JQ got some.
Chicken, man, that is a winner. I ain't got nothing for that. That is. The
Wait,
winner.
Say what?
What'd you say?
Yeah, that's a winner.
Oh, the white gloves.
That's
funny.
Oh man,
Rob.
Robin, all of you preventing from fingerprints from getting on the football. Proper circumstance. I'm like, man, they hand them guys a sheet of paper for winning the award, like he won a science project. I'm like, that's what he did.
Oh gosh.
Man.
He held it for 1,000 days. That was hilarious. He was like, Pace, I got this for 1,000 days, man, and now it's over. That's funny.
And then the No Fun League throws a flag for them celebrating. I was like,
and yeah, they want to talk about it. And that they said they wanted to make it fun. Like, you know, they're gonna tolerate. Remember they said they're going to tolerate celebrations. They wanted to have fun. And the more creative you were, the better. You know, who are the Chiefs? They were doing like a little, I think they're doing like the drill, like some type of like that. That was pretty funny, man. So. Yeah, it was like, dude, man, keep some fun. You know, that was kind of cool, man. So, again, thanks, NFL, for, again, taking something we love and basically crapping on it. Anyway, unless you guys have anything else to say. Go ahead.
That was a special moment. For them to throw a flag in that situation, to me, that was just classless.
Yeah, no, that's stupid. I agree. That's it. If you go, if you know
how
Rob
feels about
mm-hmm.
We know how Rob feels about that. And Roger Goodell's favorite person.
Oh, yeah. You know Hitler has something to do with that.
Oh, here we go. That's how I get Rob amped up. Talk about Roger Goodell. Oh, All right, gentlemen. I know we'll keep talking for hours if we don't, like, wrap this up, too. And I'm really nervous about the lady jumping in. But, again, hey, guys, have a great week. Be safe.
It's been fun.
I got some events. It's always been fun. And good luck in the draft, as always, too. And we'll keep it going. Have a great week, fellas.
I'll be looking at y'all watch on Sunday trying to rush the preacher.
Stop it.
I got to get this game on. Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, man. I can't, y'all. I can't, man. I'm laughing too much. My wife is going to come get me because I'm trying to keep her up. All right, guys.
All right. Good night, people.
We'll talk to you.
We kid because
all
we right. care, you all.
Absolutely.
Make sure you keep your priorities first.
There it is. All right. God. Good night, Rob.
Good night.
Yep.